Chapter 19. When you go on a trip, the drive there usually feels twice as long as the ride home. For Jamie and me, it's the opposite. The drive from Marquette is agonizingly protracted. Lily's voice pops into my head, as clear as if she were leaning forward from the back seat and whispering to me. Your black and white shield keeps osmosis combustion from happening. So tell me about Coach Bobby, he says as we pass through O'Train. Coach Bobby? He's been the hockey coach at Sioux High forever, teaches business classes, always stood up for me when other coaches acted like I shouldn't be on a guy's team. Did you get a lot of shit? I shrug. Levi taught me some filthy smack if anyone messed with me. He raises his eyebrows again, this time curious. I'm not telling you, I say with a small laugh that lowers my secret squirrel shield a smidge. Somewhere along the seamy stretch, a curveless 25-mile portion of M28 that cuts through the swampy wetlands of a wildlife refuge, I decide to take charge of the situation. Okay, we gotta come up with relationship patterns, like Ron said. Jamie nods in agreement. We can hold hands, I say, and kiss on the cheek only, not on the lips. No tongue? He flashes a grin that makes his eyes sparkle. Hells no. I look away, focusing on the jack pines that we pass. I take deep breaths until my voice can be casual. I want to touch your hair, smooth it down, or ruffle the curls. Okay, then I get to touch yours. No, I blurt, as the ghost of TJ's meaty paw strokes my hair. I don't want any reminders of that liar. That hardly seems fair, Jamie says lightly. Fairness isn't one of our 7 grandfathers, didn't you know? And the 7 grandfathers are? Teachings about living a good life, Nishnab way. Humility, respect, honesty, bravery, wisdom, love, truth. I let out a half chuckle. Levi calls them the 7 godfathers. Jamie gives a half smile, but doesn't say anything until we reach the gas station at the edge of the blink and you'll miss it town of Sini. Would it be okay to put my arm around you when we're next to each other? He asks. Yeah, that makes sense, I add. Now, all these rules are for when we're around other people. When we're alone like this, it's coworkers only. He turns his head to give me a look, eyebrows raised like, duh. Well, I just wanted to put it out there, so there's no misunderstandings, I say. When we reach the 4-way stop at the intersection with M123, I point to turn north. As we drive through the tiny village of Paradise, Jamie makes the requisite crack about driving through Paradise. I roll my eyes. He smiles, twitching the tail of his red scar. How did you get your scar? For real, and don't say car accident. He's quiet as the road takes us along Lake Superior, past rustic cabins and the odd new fancy vacation home. I got held down and sliced with a knife. He shakes off a shiver. In case you were wondering, yes, knife wounds hurt like hell. It's somber in the truck for the last mile to Coach Bobby's cabin. My thoughts spiral. Did Jamie get knifed on the job? How often do investigations result in injuries? I don't want us to show up at the party like this, both of us glum. I motion for him to turn into the next gravel driveway. Yeah, well, at least my dick is bigger than yours, I say to Jamie's utter astonishment. I quickly add, I swear that's what Levi told me to say on the ice. He throws his head back and laughs. The sound is deep and reverberates all the way to my toes. But the good stuff happens when worlds collide. I roll in my eyes at the echo of Lily's voice before I give in and join Jamie. Still laughing, we follow the music down weathered driftwood steps to the beach party, Nickelback singing about someday. When we arrive, 3 dozen people stop what they're doing and stare at us. Lovebirds! Levi shouts above the music. Macy Manitou finishes a back walkover. Her mouth gapes like a flounder out of water. Jamie reaches for my hand and squeezes it in tacit understanding. It's showtime. It's a perfect Labor Day, one last glorious, cloudless day, as if the summer days when rain chilled your bones were in exchange for this. Lake Superior is calm, with only minuscule waves teasing the shore. Some of my former teammates are roasting hot dogs around a large bonfire. Others play touch football on the sugar sand beach. Levi is surrounded by girls, enthralled by some story he's telling. I lead Jamie to the gazebo where Coach Bobby flips burgers on a large gas grill. When he sees me, my old coach sets down the metal spatula and holds out his fist so we can bump knuckles. I suspect we will greet each other this way forever. Hi, Coach. This is Jamie Johnson. He's one of the new soups. Jamie lets go of my hand to shake Coach Bobby's. Robert LaFleur. Everyone calls me Coach Bobby. He resumes his grill master duties, adding cheese slices to half the burgers. Coach tilts his head my way. Best left defenseman I've ever coached. You got yourself one hell of a girl there, son. Yes, sir, Coach Bobby, Jamie says. She should be headed to Michigan to play D1, Coach says with exaggerated gruffness. I know him well enough to hear the kernel of true disappointment deep within the bluster. Time to try new things, I say, reaching for Jamie's hand. It almost sounds true. Maybe Coach can hear beneath my bluster as well. We sit at an old picnic table to eat cheeseburgers. I get 2 cups of lemonade from the large drink cooler. Jamie's plate is loaded with tiny kosher dill pickles. I wonder if he actually loves pickles, or if he's just playing the part of someone who loves pickles. Levi sits with us, along with Stormy Noden, who has fit 3 cheeseburgers on his plate. For all his voracious appetite, he's scrawny. Not slender yet lean-muscled like Jamie. Stormy's taken off his shirt, not at all self-conscious about his practically concave chest. Smooth, cinnamon skin glistens under the bright sunlight. His hair is pulled back into a thick braid. So, how was Marquette? Levi wants to know. Answering for us, Stormy belts out a pervy-sounding bow chicken wow wow. Thanks for the restaurant suggestion, Levi, Jamie says. It was great. Mike Edwards swaggers over with military precision. His blonde hair is freshly buzzed and gelled, which makes his big head look like a square porcupine. He's kept his t-shirt on to keep from getting a sunburn, but his muscular Zaganash forearms are already pink. So the rumors are true. Donnie Defense plays offense, too, Mike says. Where's your girlfriend? I ask, knowing full well of his hockey season chastity vow. Gotta keep the hockey temple clean, he says. Girls aren't unclean and you're not Samson. You don't have to worry about some Delilah chick snipping off your power. Delora's who? Mike eats his burger perimeter first until there's one perfect center bite left. Holy, read something other than hockey magazines and computer manuals, I say. Hey, Bubble, Levi says in a gentle, unfamiliar tone. I heard Granny June gave you Lily's Jeep. When I nod, he adds, that was really nice of her. He smiles kindly. My shoulders relax. I hadn't realized I'd been so tense. He grins. Starting tomorrow, me and Stormy are seniors. Mike's a junior, and you're a lowly freshman. College, I say, pointing at myself first, and then the guys. High school. I want to run with you. Levi looks at Stormy and Mike, his 2 best friends, and revises himself. Us lowlies want to run with you tomorrow morning. Sound good? Jamie too. His voice is playful, but there is a seriousness behind his eyes. Sometimes my brother drives me crazy, and other times, like now, he does something sweet and thoughtful. Our dad would be proud of Levi, being supportive when I need it most. I smile. I'd like that. I explain the sequence of events to Jamie. You come by my place before 7, we'll warm up and swing by Levi's before we pick up Mike along the way. Welcome to Hockey World, Levi tells me. So that's why he's been so accepting of Jamie, because I've blurred the lines between regular world and hockey world. Guilt nibbles away at me. My brother doesn't know I'm just acting the part of a hockey girlfriend. I hadn't given any thought to what I might need to reconcile after Jamie and Ron leave. The whole aftermath. It's their investigation, but it's my life. The rest of the afternoon flies by. We play touch football with the guys. When I throw a perfect spiral to Levi, Stormy makes a wisecrack about all the things I learned from TJ Kawaden. My stomach cramps from either the burger, which was pinkish red in the middle, or from my moon. I ask Macy to sub in so I can go to the bathroom in Coach Bobby's cabin. It's been a year since Coach's last party. He's renovated his kitchen. I'm impressed with the high-end finishes. He has the same brand of appliances that Grand Mary has in the big house. Sunset means a rapid temperature drop. Jamie and I go to the truck. It's easier to change behind it rather than in the tiny cabin bathroom. When it's his turn behind the truck, I glance at the side mirror as Jamie pulls up his jeans. I look away, but not before his trio of well-defined hamstring muscles, semitendinosus, biceps femoris, and semimembranosus, are etched in my brain. Wait, was he able to see me when our positions were reversed? We chat with the guys until I see two seats open up at the bonfire. I move quickly to claim the spots for Jamie and me. I watch Coach Bobby supervise the fireworks setup. My brother always brings the good kind you can only buy on the res. A blur moves next to me as Macy sits in the empty seat. "That's for Jamie," I tell her. "Aw, saving for Jamie." Her syrupy voice mocks me. She leans closer. "Didn't know you had it in you to be a shark off the ice. His girl back home never stood a chance." Macy's superpower is the ability to give a backhanded compliment. "All's fair in love and hockey," I say, silently adding, "and meth." Heather Noden, one of Stormy's many dozens of cousins, leans across me. Her weed fumes overpower the bonfire smoke. "You're just mad Donis got him before you could. Now be gone before somebody drops a house on you," she tells my nemesis. "Fuck you, Heather," Macy says without any heat. She leaves to chat with some other girls. They look over at Heather and say snarky things between giggles. Heather is dressed oddly for a bonfire. Her Red Roots hoodie is normal, but the skin-tight capri jeans are open at the side seams, an inch wide from hip to mid-calf, and held together by oversized safety pins. Her black flip-flops are the impractical platform kind that I'd bust an ankle in. "Thanks," I tell Heather, or as they say in my village, "miigwech." She laughs a little too hard at the way I echo stuff the elders always say. Heather's eyes are half shut. Her laughter is hollowed out, paper thin, empty inside. When guys do nothing but smoke weed and play video games, we call them lost boys, as in Peter Pan's gang in Neverland. Never growing up, never leaving home, never holding on to a job. I suppose there can be lost girls, too. "Hey," Heather says, pulling a clear plastic bag from the pouch of her hoodie. The pills look like speckled candy. "I got some Molly V you and your new boyfriend can go all night long. Got other stuff, too." She holds out another sandwich bag, this one with a half dozen rolled joints. I stare at her. "Heather, we just buried Lily. You remember my best friend who got shot through the heart by her meth head ex-boyfriend? So, no, I don't want any ecstasy boner pills." She stares back with eyes that are suddenly laser-focused. "Fine, but you sure do have a strange way of grieving, Donis, showing off your new boyfriend at a party." Heather Noden leaves me at the bonfire, where I seethe over truths I cannot tell. After the fireworks, the crowd thins out. We all fit around the bonfire now. "Tell us a story, firekeeper's daughter," Levi says to me from across the fire. I shake my head. "There's no snow on the ground." Auntie says we honor our traditions when we save stories for the wintertime. Macy scoffs. "That's just so snakes don't overhear the teachings." She glances around. "All clear," she says with a grin before launching into a story. "Creator gathered all the animals and birds, along with first man and first woman." She lowers her voice to sound like her dad, Chief Manitou. I'm Creator, and I've got a gift for each one of you. People laugh. So, Creator named a gift and waited for someone to claim it as theirs. Who wants to fly higher than any other bird and bring prayers directly to me? Macy waves a hand toward the sky. Miggy says, me, pick me. You got it. Everyone laughs more. She waits a beat before continuing. How about big teeth to cut down trees for a house that can purify a river? Amick nudges first man, whispering, you better not wait till the end and get stuck with the bad gift. Then Amick jumps up and shouts, Creator, that gift sounds perfect. Please choose me. You got it. Macy looks around the fire, pausing for dramatic effect, just like her dad when he's making a big speech. Now, first man grew anxious as he watched the four-leggeds and the winged claim their gifts. He tried raising his hand a few times, but others were quicker. Finally, it was just first man and first woman left. Creator announced the next to the last gift. How about the ability to pee standing up? The laughter is even louder. First man pushes past first woman. Me, Creator, me, pick me. You got it. Macy's eyes glitter like the crackling embers at the base of the bonfire. First man asks Creator, Oh, by the way, what was the last gift? Multiple orgasms.